Well, good afternoon, everyone. It is a joy and a privilege to come back and see my friends. They are going to start tempting me up in Hellertown, because now that the United Group has had their split, the local group in Hellertown. In fact, I missed some of those friends from coming down, but they have a peaceful environment now. And I hear that they wouldn't mind me speaking up there sometime. But I didn't bite this time because I wanted to see my friends over at Bruce Chesty's group and here as well. This has been a tradition to come see y'all, and I really do enjoy getting down to see you. But sometime I may go up there. I did double up again, as is the case. I did a wedding yesterday in Allentown area, actually down toward Quakertown. So I did a wedding yesterday, and this is the wedding season. Next week I'll be up in Seattle, Washington, doing a wedding up there. So I get the privilege of doing some of these weddings around the country, and I enjoy it very much. And also then I get to see some brethren. So I got to see my father. By the way, he sends us greetings. He wanted to be here, but it would have been too long a day for him. He just he thought about it, but then going to both services, being all day, and being at the wedding last night, that would be just too much for him. But we're trying to get him to consider moving to, well, we offered him to move to Texas, but he's not going to do that. He's going to stay near my sister in the Allentown area. The house is going to be up for sale next month, July 1st, and then hopefully they'll sell. We could pray for that his house sells quickly, and then he can move down closer to my sister. That would she would really appreciate that. Want to mention to you as well, I just want to offer to you again our website's churchofgodbigsandy.com. That's churchofgodbigsandy.com. You can hear archived sermons. If you happen to be sick at home and can't make it to church, you can hear a live sermon. But every week, I'm committed to make 3 articles available every single week, because a website has to be fresh. You have to have fresh information. So every week under the Among Friends section, I have an article every single week. This one's on the 5th commandment this week. You know, obviously the 6th commandment next week. I'm doing that series. Our Edifying the Body section this week is an article, an inspiring article about the Joplin tornado that someone wrote. In fact, if some of you want to write and send articles to us, we would put those under the Edifying the Body section. And we have an Eye on the World section, which is about world events. That's not very positive. I mean, to be honest, some people don't want to hear, you know, what's happening in the world is not very positive, but we report it for those who want to see it. Normally it's short news articles, but this week, because I was traveling, I have a book review about the book Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky. So if you're interested in seeing a book review about that, just go to our website. Again, like I said, the article about Joplin is real positive. My article about the 5th commandment is real positive. Rules for Radicals just telling you what's going on. Yeah, that's just if you need to know that. But so anyway, we make that available as a service for you. You may have plenty of things to read, but we just want to make things available. And it's interesting with the internet connection now. There's so many people around the world do get to read things, and you know, there's many good websites out there and good information out there. Well, when I get a chance to speak, you know, my main 2 goals in speaking are the same every time I speak: to point you to God and to encourage you. That's the main goal every time. So then you say, okay, you want to point the brethren to God, your friends to God, you want to encourage them. What specific way are you going to do it this time? You have the handout in front of you. I want to give a presentation entitled Stages of Maturity. I've given this before. In fact, to be honest, this was a sermon that got me in trouble with a specific church corporation. I gave this sermon back in September 1997. It did not go over well with the leaders of that church at that time, because we're going to see if this is promoting people to grow and mature, to be independent and then interdependent, and the leaders at that church wanted people to be dependent. Now, let me tell you right offhand, this is a problem we have in the world today. Satan the devil wants people in slavery. There's no doubt about it. So he will try to get you in slavery through the civil government. Even if you live in a country like England where there's a monarchy, there's a class system there, and that, you know, there's a differentiation. When you have a dictatorship, the dictators want the people to be dependent under them, to put the thumb on them. And it is my opinion, even in our sweet land, the United States of America, there's a movement to get people more under the thumb of the government to try to expand the government reach. And in our country, They try to get people dependent because they're trying to buy their votes. That's I'm not the only one who says that. Most commentators will say that's the case. So I believe there's a movement afoot to keep you dependent, both in civil government and in church governments. Now, as you hear me say this, you're going to say, Dave, I think we've got a pretty good understanding of this, and I think you do. So part of the reason why I've chosen this subject for this audience is I want to help prepare you to teach it to others, to help you fine-tune it as you teach it to others. You will find a varying degree of receptive audience to these concepts. So I'm going to try to make it as plain as I can to try to go over some basic concepts about the stages of maturity. The three stages in this theory are dependence, independence, and interdependence. We're going to end up looking at scriptures. A lot of scriptures on the handout, which you can study later. We'll cover some of them. But we're not even going to go to the Bible aspect of a Christian yet. We are going to go to a human being. If you're a member of the human race, if you are a human being, this applies to you. This applies to everybody. Let's look at some, just look at the family for a second. The questions on the front page, how everyone matures as a person. How dependent is a newborn baby upon his parents? Well, totally. A newborn baby is totally dependent. Dependent food, clothes, clean up the diaper, totally dependent. Then how dependent is an infant? Well, as a child grows, he's already starting to grow in independence, but he's still very dependent as he's growing as a small child. Number three then, how do these experiences affect growing independence? Well, you know, as a child starts to crawl, his world expands. As he starts to walk, his world expands. As he starts to talk, as he goes to school. Now you see, there's growing independence. Some people will tell you that independence is bad because it's painted bad. It's defined badly. I'm telling you, you have to become independent in life. But you don't stop there. You cannot be dependent your whole life. You have children. I have a 30-year-old son and a 27-year-old son. I don't want them dependent on me. I don't want them to call me up and say, Dad, I'm thinking about brushing my teeth today. Which toothpaste should I use? Now that's, when they're 2 years old, you tell them, brush your teeth now. Here's the toothpaste you use. Here's how you make your bed. You got to teach them everything. When they're small, you teach them everything. When they're older, you don't want to do that. And if you do want to do that to your kids, you have a problem. It's a control problem. If you're trying to control your 35-year-old kids, that's a control problem. If you're trying to control your 45-year-old kids, that's a control problem. We have to go through the phase of independence. And when people say, no, independence is bad, a lot of times they're trying to keep people under the thumb. It's a phase. By the way, it's not where we stop, but it's an important phase to come to. So then growing independence, number four, once a person enters junior high school, growing independence. Once they get a permit or a license to drive a car, more independence. Once they receive permission to date, and that varies from family to family, growing independence. They find a job, they go to college, and then they buy a car, they graduate from college, they work full-time, they get married. Let's look over at 1 Corinthians 13, verse 11. The Apostle Paul made the analogy of the growing process, the maturing process. Just because you have God's Spirit doesn't mean you're immune to this. In fact, this applies to all of us, every single one of us, and it will apply to people you're trying to help as you try to explain it. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 11. Notice how Paul said this. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I reasoned as a child. One of my favorite things in life, and I recommend you do this too, is to encourage people, look at people where they're at, and don't fight it. You might shape people. In other words, when I see two-year-olds acting like two-year-olds, that's one of my favorite expressions is, there you go, acting like a two-year-old again. I don't mean that condemning. That's a good thing. Two-year-olds act a certain way. Remember that. Five-year-olds act like a certain way. 13-year-olds act like a certain way. You know, and to remember where they're at. Now, again, we want to shape where they're at. We want to help the maturing process. But when someone acts up, don't quickly jump in and try to treat them like your age or my age. I did a wedding 3 weeks ago, and I was interested why the young man asked me. He's a Church of God kid. She was not a Church of God gal. I did premarital counseling. We had a really nice wedding. Every wedding is personal. I write every wedding specifically for that couple. And I asked he asked me. He said, "Do you know why I picked you to do the wedding?" I said, "No. As a matter of fact, I really don't. I was kind of curious why you did. I mean, I liked him. He liked me, but I didn't know why he picked me." And I did good on this one. I did really good. You know, sometimes I look back in my pastoring and I made mistakes and I have to apologize to people. And I have to do that because I've made my share of mistakes. But this one I did good on. Let me tell you what happened. He said, "Do you remember the time I came to church and I told you I pierced my tongue?" I said, "Yeah, kind of." He goes, "Do you remember what you said?" I said, "No, I don't quite remember." He said, "You said, show it to me." And so he opened up his mouth and showed me his pierced tongue, and I didn't make any big deal about it. And he said, "That's why I asked you to do my wedding. You didn't give me a lecture. You didn't give me a sermon. You didn't tell me how stupid I was, even though I look back, I was pretty stupid. But you didn't tell me that. You just said, hey, I've never seen a pierced tongue. In fact, it's the only pierced tongue I've ever seen in church before. And I've never seen one since. People may have had it, but they keep their mouth closed. But again, I actually did something good. I treated him like he was probably 18 or 19. I treated him like an 18 or 19-year-old. I did think it was stupid, but, you know, I didn't have to say it. He grew up, and he's 30 now. He said, "Well, you didn't give me any big lecture." And that's the kind of thing we should do, is remember where people are. And, you know, when people, you know, when they're children, they speak a certain way. They understand a certain way. They think a certain way. And Paul said, when I matured, I put away those things. We're all in a maturing process. There is a process. And the more we understand the process, the better for us. And the more we understand the process, the more we can help other people. And that's, again, that's part of the slant today, is how do we help other people? Now, again, we don't want to stop at independence. Independence is a good thing. It's not the final thing. A person who stops at independence, you know what they are? They're a radical. They're a radical. A person who says, "I will not work with anyone else, I will not deal with anybody else, I will not relate with anyone else," actually, a lot of those people end up in prison because they're independent, they're out there doing things, but they're not going to live according to norms, they're not going to live according to rules, they're not going to give and take with people. They're going to do it differently. But we have to get to the interdependent stage. And here are some of the ways a young person's life, he starts to mature in that way. When a person works full-time, a lot of times they have to learn to be interdependent. When a person gets married, which may be one of the greatest sources of interdependence, because interdependence is a strong man and a strong woman blending, one flesh, blending. Not the woman surrendering completely who she is. Not the man surrendering completely who he is. Strong people who make a choice to blend. One flesh. That's the greatest form of interdependence. Of course, when you have children, now you're adding a third person to the party, or a fourth one to the party, and you keep adding to the party, interdependent. Visiting mom and dad. Oh, by the way, my goal as a parent is to become obsolete, where my kids do not need me. If I drop off the... In fact, my place in this earth is where nobody needs me. Nobody. But think about this, though. It's good when people value me. I want my kids to value me, not need me. I want my kids to love me and say, "I value Dad's opinion. I value hanging out with Dad. But if I drop dead of a heart attack this week, their life has to go on. I want my wife to value me. If I dropped dead this week, I would want my wife to miss me. But I wouldn't want her life to crumble because I can't exist without him. I would want her to be strong enough that she could exist without me. I would like the congregation I pastor, who values me, it should go on. And yes, they'd make adjustments. I don't even know what adjustments they'd make, but they'd figure it out. They're mature people. They don't need me, but they value me. Look at our relationship here today. You don't need me. But the fact that you put me on the speaking schedule, you value my coming. I don't need to see you on the Sabbath day. I could go other places. But I value you. We have a relationship together. And we're sister congregations. We're brothers and sisters in Christ. We work together. So you see the difference between needing someone and valuing someone. We value each other. Then children ask mom and dad for advice. That's good. Not that they have to do it. But hey, mom and dad are smart in this area and that area, and I want to ask them. The last note is, mom and dad ask children for advice. If you don't think you ask your children for advice, you're not paying attention to technology. I've got a granddaughter who's going to turn 6 on the 4th of July. And already I could ask her for advice about technology. She's only 6 years old. But these young people... So in other words, there's things you can ask the teenagers in the room advice about. Lots of things. You can ask lots of advice of teenagers, but especially technology. They're way ahead of us because they just soak that stuff in. But again, it's not like, see, if you think I'm an adult, all young people have to ask advice of me. Well, what short-sightedness is that? There's a lot of advice you can ask from anybody. Or some if you have this problem, I'm a man, all women have to ask advice for me. Boy, are you in la-la land. Or if you're said, I'm a this particular race, and I'll never ask advice of another particular race. Boy, are you in la-la land. We can get advice from each other, the give and take of life. But kids ask advice of their parents. Mom and dad ask advice of their kids. Interdependent. We enjoy each other. We learn from each other. Let me quickly read from Stephen Covey's book on the next page, The 7 Habits. Help again showing how this works with people. Dependent, independent, interdependent. If I were physically dependent, paralyzed or disabled or limited in some physical way, I would need you to help me. Let me stop right there. That's where we're getting with my father. Guess what? There he goes again, acting like an 82-year-old. He's needing more help. The Johns told me, Sue, you said your dad just moved. Your dad either had to move closer to you or closer to your sister because he needs more help. As much as my father has given to me through the years, I'm happy to help him. If he needs help physically, he needs help emotionally because my dad's not choosing to come down to us. He's not choosing to go down to my brother in West Virginia. He wants to stay in Pennsylvania. So my sister gets most of the work. But my sister helps balance the checkbook. My sister helps making decisions to make sure salesmen don't take advantage. Because, you know, you go through life fighting and strong all through life. And when you get older, it's kind of like you don't want to fight so much. So a pushy salesman comes after you. And they prey upon older people. Because they know your resistance now. They prey upon you. And I've got senior citizen friends who are in the 80s, like who just bought like an expensive vacuum cleaner. And then I find out about it, and I get on the phone, and I get them to get their money back. Because, first of all, they only needed a vacuum cleaner, but they didn't need the big one they got. But they just wear you down. Because everyone's hot for money now. They've got to get money. So again, sometimes people need help physically and emotionally. Again, if I were physically dependent, I would need you to help me. If I were emotionally dependent, my sense of worth and security would come from your opinion of me. If you don't like me, it could be devastating. And that's a big thing, young people, I mean, for everybody. But that's where peer pressure comes in. Peer pressure comes in because, or it can be with older people too. It can be with anybody where you're dependent upon, I'm dependent on what you think about me. If you approve of me, then I'm okay. But if you don't approve of me, oh no, I'm worthless. And that happens at different phases of life for different people. Again, it's a normal thing for young people, but it can happen with baby boomers, the same thing. Baby boomers who have to still buy the things to be cool, still buy the things to be hip because I've got to be in. And that is a dependency about emotionally what people think of you. That was one of the greatest lessons I learned back in 1995. When the church I was in kind of just went crazy a little bit. And then even after that, some of my friends believed wrong information about me and said bad things about me. Those are old stories. They're not worth anything. But the point I want to make is, that helped me more than anything to not care what anyone thought of me. And as much as I still like to have good relationships, I can tell you right now, the only one I care who thinks about me is God. Because I had good friends stab me in the back and good friends turn on me. And that was so painful, but you know what? It was so great because I learned the most important lesson of all. Because right now, it's like I try to be nice to people. I try to serve people. I try to help people. I try to be courteous to people. But if they don't give it back to me, I'm not devastated by that. You can't be devastated by that because I'm not emotionally dependent on what they think of me. I'm dependent upon what God thinks of me. Then it gets, if I were intellectually dependent, I could count on you to do my thinking for me, to think through the issues and problems. And see, in the maturity process, brethren, to even today in this sermon right now, this group does not believe in groupthink. I don't believe in groupthink. You may not agree with everything I say today, and I'm really happy about that. I'm fine with that. Your position is whatever you think's right, you accept because you think it's right. If you think I'm wrong, you don't accept it. You're not forced to accept it. You're not in a position where you have to have groupthink. And no one's better try groupthink on me because it won't work. I'm way past groupthink. I no longer have to think like everyone. I love to talk to people of different perspectives. I learn a lot that way. Now, if I were independent, now we'll get to the next thing about independent. If I'm independent physically, I can pretty well do my own. Mentally, I can think my own thoughts. I can move from analytically and organize and express my thoughts in understandable ways. Emotionally, I would be validated from within. I would be inner-directed. My sense of worth would not be a function of being liked or treated well. True independence of character empowers us to act rather than to be acted upon. Let me just say this about independence. And again, if a church tells you independence is bad, they're probably trying to keep you under their thumb. If a church tells you independence is bad, they're probably trying to keep you under their thumb to control you. Independence is not where you end up, but it's an important stage. Here's what independence is. If you're rude to me, I've got to deal with it. I can't blame you. I've got to deal with it. That's independence. In fact, on the handout, it says the difference between dependence and independence. Notice these words. Here's dependent thinking. You must take care of me. You came through for me. You did not come through for me. I blame you. In other words, you only influence me. All of you influence me, just like I influence you. All of you are either going to be a positive influence on me or a negative influence on me. But see, I can't blame you. Because if you're rude to me, I'm still accountable for me. Even in judgment day, I can't go to God and say, well, God, why'd you do that, Dave? Well, you didn't see the way Brian treated me. Brian treated me horribly. Brian was rude to me. And God will say, so what? Well, aren't you going to take that into account? Why? Well, because he was so mean to me, I had to act this way. He said, why didn't you grow up? Brian will have to give account for how he dealt with you. Or like, well, why'd you do that? Well, Jim Johns told me that. I asked Jim Johns a question, and Jim Johns gave me this advice, and I now see it was wrong. Well, where's your accountability in this? Well, Jim told me that. See, independence is taking personal responsibility. Now, again, we're going to get to the third stage of working together, which is the highlight. But you have to be independent. You have to go through that phase. And when teenagers do it, that's what they do. Now, some do it too flamboyantly. And you try to help them to use wisdom. You try to help them to use self-discipline. But they have to go through it. And if you're squashing your kids and say, I can't let my kids make mistakes, that's not going to really, they have to make some mistakes, but you try to guide them through it so that they make as little as possible. You try to help them mature. You try to help them grow up as fast as possible. Now here's independence. I can do it. I am responsible. I am self-reliant. I can choose. And we have to go through that. Now, Covey talks about interdependence, where we want to end up. Let me read that to you. Interdependence is far more mature, more advanced concept. If I am physically independent, I am self-reliant and capable. But I also realize that you and I working together can accomplish far more than even at my best I could accomplish alone. If I am an emotionally interdependent, I derive a great sense of worth within myself, but I also recognize the need for love, for giving, for receiving love from others. If I'm intellectually interdependent, I realize that I need the best thinking of other people to join with my own. Just as dependent was you and independent was I, interdependent is we. We can do it. We can cooperate. We can combine our talents and abilities. We can create something greater together. Doesn't that sound like a marriage? We, husband and wife, can do this. We, husband and wife, can cooperate. We, husband and wife, can combine our talents and abilities. We can create something greater together. Doesn't that sound like a congregation? That's why you're here. You don't need a congregation for salvation. But you connect with a congregation to learn together and to serve together. Yeah, this morning I gave this similar sermon over Church of God Seventh Day. And I keep wanting to go to one of their conferences. They had one in Texas down in Corpus Christi 2 years ago, and I wanted to go, but I got too busy. This year they're having it in Chicago in July. The problem is I'm speaking in Chicago on July 30th, and their conference is July 23rd. And I shouldn't be gone from the home area twice, 2 weeks in a row like that. I tried not to do that. So one of the reasons I wanted to go to their conference. But you see, they have a conference together because they see, as in their conference, they can help missionary. They can do missionary work. Together, when you come together here, you learn together. You can serve together. You can do some service projects. You can do service projects alone, but you can do it together. And you can have a support system. Do you have to have a congregation for salvation? Of course not. Why do you have a congregation? For the benefits. For the good. And again, some congregations have just gotten more peaceful because of some church separations. I won't go into details. But the thing is, two places I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight in my home, and I don't want to fight in a congregation. So it's really like if people don't want to be here, don't want to be in a congregation, then go to it. There's many around. But there's the two places I personally don't want to fight. I don't want to fight in my home. Thankfully, I don't have fights in my home. We've had some tussles in our congregation through the years. But right now, we've had 5 years of peace, and I really love it. And again, even at the time when we had tussles 5 years ago, what I told the people, I said, please be happy here. But if you can't be happy here, please be happy somewhere else. You know, in other words, we'd like you to be here, but be happy. You know, we want to be happy too. So if you're miserable here, I mean, please don't be miserable here, but if you're going to be miserable, maybe you can find a place where you won't be miserable anymore. And if people would do that, then we wouldn't have so many church battles, because the thing about churches, churches don't have to felt, they don't have to worship together. But why can't people be nice to each other? And I know the projects you have, you're having your combined picnic, and you also have this combo with the United group up north. Those are the good things to do. You don't have to worship together, but love each other, mingle together, be together. Because again, maybe worshiping, you know, the fact that we don't all worship together, you know what that means? More speaking opportunities, more music opportunities, more scripture reading opportunities. All that's good. The problem is people being vicious toward each other. So I know you're all making your point not to be vicious toward anybody. Keep setting that good example. I'm glad if some church wants to start a church so they can be in charge, that's fine with me. Just be nice to us. Just be nice to us. Start a church and makes you feel important. I don't even care. Start a million churches and all of you feel important. I don't care. Just be nice to us, you know? But that's the hard part. People won't be nice to each other. Oh, by the way, if someone tells you that you don't ever need to be independent, that you can jump from dependence straight to interdependence, Covey would tell you you're wrong, and I agree with him. Notice he says, interdependence is a choice only independent people can make. Dependent people cannot choose to become interdependent. They don't have the character to do it. They don't own enough of themselves. Teenage children go through independence before they finally learn interdependence. They don't jump from a two-year-old straight to an interdependent person. They have to flex their wings. They have to form their identity. And then they share identity with others. Again, I start out with that example because this is the example of life. Now let's look to the Christian example. Now let's look at the scriptures then. In fact, I will do some of this interactively. This may not help the taping. Sorry about that. I don't know what you do the taping for, but when I go through each segment, and I'm going to give some examples of the three different areas, if you would like to also give some examples as well, that way you can contribute. But before we get to the three areas as a Christian, let me go over a couple points here, maturing as a Christian. All we've talked about before is how a human being matures. And since you're a human being, it applies to you and to me. Now, how does it apply to a Christian? Here's three points I want to make real quickly to make certain we understand some ground rules of understanding. The first point is, all Christians must seek to have dependence upon God. See, some people will say, I want to depend upon God, so I don't need two and three. But that's not the point. The point is, all of us want to depend upon God. We're talking about the human way it works. In fact, the third point there says, people who have a dependence upon God will mature from dependence to interdependence, independence to interdependence. So in other words, if someone says, well, I just depend upon God, I get it. We all want to depend upon God, but still in that process, well, I can make the point right now. I'll jump ahead of the game. God is interdependent with me, as with you. The most interdependent God thing God did was he said, I'm going to send my only begotten son to die for you. Wow. Is there any other interdependent act? That my dad, my spiritual father said, I'm giving up my son to be your older brother. You're going to be his brother. You're going to be my son. He didn't have to do that. He said, I want to connect with you, Dave. I want to be connected with you. And so he set the example of interdependence. But I also want to make a point, too, there. It says, many people confuse the correct concept of dependence upon God with an incorrect codependency. I just want to express it briefly. It's a full subject and a long subject about codependency. Codependency, the best way I'll explain it is this. Codependency is doing the right thing for the wrong reason. Okay, in other words, there's a scripture back in 1 Corinthians 13 that says, if you have all knowledge but don't have love, you're nothing. If you have all prophecy and don't have love, you're nothing. If you give to the poor and don't have love, you're nothing. Think about that a second. Giving to the poor without love, why would you do that? Well, here's why a person does it. Because here's how they say, I'm worthless. My parents told me I was worthless. My school told me I was worthless. My church told me I was worthless. And I know how to feel good about, I can feel good about, if I give some food to the poor, then that will help me feel better about myself. See, that's doing the right thing for the wrong reason. Because that's giving to the poor without love. That's giving to the poor to make you feel good about yourself. And quite frankly, a lot of people try to earn salvation through codependency. Some people will say, I fast twice in the week. I get tithes of all that I possess. If you recognize that, that's a parable from the scripture, from Luke. So some people are like, they fast for the wrong reason, they tithe for the wrong reason. Some people keep the Sabbath for the wrong reason. Deep down, they're trying to earn salvation because God doesn't love them. God doesn't love me. But if I keep the Sabbath, God will love me. Wrong! God already loves you. You don't keep the Sabbath to get God's love. You don't fast to get God's love. You don't give to the poor to get God's love. That's a codependency. That's because people have told you you're not worth anything. Instead of accepting God's true love, God's true forgiveness, instead of accepting that and be filled with His love, and then when you're filled with His love, then you go out and really truly serve other people, it's not to make yourself feel good. See, it's not like brownie points. It's like, I love Boy Scouts. We have Frontier Girls down in our area. We host a Frontier Girls troop. And they get a lot of badges and things. We love it for these little girls to get badges and things. It's great for the Frontier Girls to get badges and things. But that's not salvation. It's not like, what badge do I get for keeping the Sabbath? What badge do I get for fasting? Well, what badge do I get to give to the poor? And God just looks and says, little son, little child, you're doing the right thing, but you're all messed up on your reasoning here. You're all messed up in your motivation. And I know some of the biggest servers in the church, you know what codependency? Some in churches that do a lot of ordinations, which I don't like the word ordination. It's a King James word that stinks. But let's say, I like to consider recognizing gifts, okay? But let's say in churches that consider ordinations, some of the best servants are the people who want to be ordained. Now, they may not even realize it. We're looking at inside people's motivation. And they work so hard because it's like, oh, if someone lays hands on me, now I feel so good about myself. But see, and that's a hidden motivation. I know some of the best servers. I know one lady, she attends in a congregation somewhere in the United States. Her life is a mess. Her background's a mess. She was abused. And she's one of the biggest servers in the church. Now, isn't serving in the church good? Yes. But a lot of her serving in the church is to deal with her abuse. And so